Why does everyone run towards a blood-curdling scream? Mumbled the senior wrangler. It's contrary to all sense. They trotted out through the cloisters and into the quadrangle. A rounded, dark shape was squatting in the middle of the ancient lawn. Steam was coming out of it in little noisome wisps.
What is it?
It can't be a compost heap in the middle of the lawn, can it?
Modo will be very upset.
The dean peered closer.
Especially because, I do believe that's his feet poking out from under it.
The heap swiveled towards the wizards and made a glop-glop noise, and then it moved.
Right then, said Ridcully, rubbing his hands together hopefully. Which of you fellows has got a spell about them at the moment?
The wizards patted their pockets in an embarrassed fashion.
Then I shall attract its attention while the bursar and the dean try to pull Modo out, said Ridcully.
Oh, good, said the dean faintly.
How can you attract a compost heap's attention? Said the senior wrangler. I shouldn't think it's even got one.
Ridcully removed his hat and stepped gingerly forward.
Load of rubbish, he roared.
The senior wrangler groaned and put his hands over his eyes. Ridcully flapped his hat in front of the heap.
Biodegradable garbage.
Poor green trash,
said the lecturer in recent runes, helpfully.
That's the ticket, said the arch-chancellor. Try to infuriate the bugger.
Behind him, a slightly different variety of mad, waspy creature popped out of the air and buzzed away. The heap lunged at the hat.
Midden, said Ridcully.
Oh, I say,
said the lecturer in recent runes, shocked. The dean and the bursar crept forward, grabbed a gardener's foot each, and pulled. Modo slid out of the heap.
It's eaten through his clothes, said the dean.
But is he all right?
He's still breathing, said the bursar.
And if he's lucky, he's lost his sense of smell, said the dean. The heap snapped at Ridcully's hat. There was a glop. The point of the hat had vanished.
Hey, there was still almost half a bottle in there,
Ridcully roared. The senior wrangler grabbed his arm.
Come on, Arch-Chancellor.
The heap swiveled and lunged towards the bursar. The wizards backed away.
It can't be intelligent, can it?
Said the bursar.
All it's doing is moving around slowly and eating things, said the dean.
Put a pointy hat on it and it'd be a faculty member, said the Arch-Chancellor. The heap came after them.
I wouldn't call that moving slowly, said the dean.
They looked expectantly at the Arch-Chancellor.
Run!
Portly though most of the faculty were, they hit a fair turn of speed up the cloisters, fought one another through the door, slammed it behind them and leaned on it. Very soon afterwards there was a damp, heavy thud on the far side.
Well, we're out of that, said the bursar.
The dean looked down.
I think it's coming through the door, Arch-Chancellor, he said in a tiny voice. Don't be daft, man. We're all leaning on it.
I didn't mean through. I meant
through.
The Arch-Chancellor sniffed.
What's burning?
Your boots, Arch-Chancellor, said the dean. Ridcully looked down. A greenish-yellow puddle was spreading under the door. The wood was charring, the flagstones were hissing, and the leather soles of his boots were definitely in trouble. He could feel himself getting lower. He fumbled with the laces and then took a standing jump onto a dry flagstone.
Bursar!
Yes, Arch-Chancellor?
Give me your boots.
What?
Damn it, man! I command you to give me your blasted boots!
This time, a long creature with four pairs of wings, two at each end and three eyes, popped into existence over Ridcully's head and dropped onto his hat.
But I am your Arch-Chancellor.
Yes, but
I think the hinges are going, said the lecturer in recent runes.
Ridcully looked around desperately.
We'll regroup in the Great Hall, he said. We'll strategically withdraw to previously prepared positions.
Who prepared them? Said the dean.
We'll prepare them when we get there, said the Arch-Chancellor through gritted teeth. Bursar, your boots, now!
They reached the double doors of the Great Hall, just as the door behind them half collapsed, half dissolved. The Great Hall's doors were much sturdier. Bolts and bars were dragged into place.
Clear the tables and pile them up in front of the door, snapped Ridcully.
But it eats through wood, said the dean.
There was a moan from the small body of Modo, which had been propped against a chair. He opened his eyes. "Quick," said Ridcully, "how can we kill a compost heap?"
"I don't think you can, Mr. Ridcully, sir," said the gardener. "How about fire? I could probably manage a small fireball," said the dean.
"It wouldn't work. It's too soggy," said Ridcully.
"It's right outside. It's eating away at the door. It's eating away at the door," sang the lecturer in recent rooms.
The wizards backed further away down the length of the hall. "I hope it doesn't eat too much wood," said the dazed Modo, radiating genuine concern. "They're a devil, excuse my Clatchian, if you get too much carbon in them. It's far too heating." "You know, this is exactly the right time for a lecture on the dynamics of compost-making, Modo," said the dean. Dwarfs do not know the meaning of the word irony.
"Well, all right. The correct balance of materials, correctly layered, according to—"
"There goes the door," said the lecturer in recent runes, lumbering towards the rest of them. The mound of furniture started to move forward. The Arch-Chancellor stared desperately around the hall at a loss. Then his eyes were drawn to a familiar heavy bottle on one of the sideboards.
"Carbon," he said. "That's like charcoal, isn't it?"
"How should I know? I'm not an alchemist," sniffed the dean. The compost heap emerged from the debris. Steam poured off it. The Arch-Chancellor looked longingly at the bottle of Wow Wow sauce. He uncorked it. He took a deep sniff. "The cooks here just can't make it properly, you know," he said. "It'll be weeks before I can get any more from home." He tossed the bottle towards the advancing heap. It vanished into the seething mass.
"Stinging nettles are always useful," said Modo behind him. "They add iron. And comfrey. Well, you can never get enough comfrey. For the minerals, you know. Myself, I've always reckoned that a small quantity of wild yarrow—"
The wizards peered over the top of an overturned table. The heap had stopped moving.
"Is it just me, or is it getting bigger?" said the senior wrangler.
"And looking happier," said the dean.
"It smells awful," said the bursar.
"Oh, well, and that was nearly a full bottle of sauce, too," said the Arch-Chancellor sadly. "I'd hardly opened it."
"Nature's a wonderful thing when you come to think about it," said the senior wrangler. "You don't all have to glare at me like that, you know. I was only passing a remark."
"There are times when—" Ridcully began, and then the compost heap exploded. It wasn't a bang or a boom. It was the dampest, most corpulent eruption in the history of terminal flatulence. Dark red flame, fringed with black, roared up to the ceiling. Pieces of heap rocketed across the hall and slapped wetly into the walls. The wizards peered out from their barricade, which was now thick with tea leaves. A cabbage stalk dropped softly onto the dean's head. He looked at a small bubbling patch on the flagstones. His face split slowly into a grin.
"Wow," he said.
The other wizards unfolded themselves. Adrenaline backwash worked its seductive spell. They grinned too, and started playfully punching one another on the shoulder.
"Eat hot sauce," roared the Arch-Chancellor. "Up against the hedge, fermented rubbish." "Can we kick ass or can we kick ass?" burbled the dean happily. "You mean can't the second time, not can, and I'm not sure that a compost heap can be said to have an—"
the senior wrangler began, but the tide of excitement was flowing against him.
"That's one heap that won't mess with wizards again," said the dean, who was getting carried away. "We're keen and mean and—" "There's three more of them out there, Modo says," said the bursar.
They fell silent.
"We could go and pick up our staffs, couldn't we?" said the dean.
The Arch-Chancellor prodded a piece of exploded heap with the toe of his boot.
"Dead things coming alive," he murmured. "I don't like that. What's next, walking statues?"
The wizards looked up at the statues of dead Arch-Chancellors that lined the Great Hall, and indeed most of the corridors of the university. The university had been in existence for thousands of years, and the average Arch-Chancellor remained in office for about 11 months, so there were plenty of statues.
"You know, I really wish you hadn't said that," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"It was just a thought," said Ridcully. "Come on, let's have a look at the rest of those heaps."
"Yeah," said the dean, now in the grip of a wild, unwizardly machismo. "We're mean. Yeah. Are we mean?"
The Arch-Chancellor raised his eyebrows and then turned to the rest of the wizards.
"Are we mean?" he said. "I'm feeling reasonably mean," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"I'm definitely very mean, I think," said the bursar. "It's having no boots that does it," he added. "I'll be mean if everyone else is," said the senior wrangler.
The Arch-Chancellor turned back to the Dean. "Yes," he said. "It appears that we're all mean."
"Yo," said the Dean.
"Yo what?" said Ridcully.
"It's not a yo what. It's just a yo," said the senior wrangler behind him. "It's a general street greeting and affirmative with convivial military in-group and masculine bonding ritual overtones."
"What?" "What? Like jolly good?" said Ridcully.
"I suppose so," said the senior wrangler, reluctantly.
Ridcully was pleased. Ankh Morpork had never offered very good prospects for hunting. He'd never thought it was possible to have so much fun in his own university.
"Right," he said. "Let's get those heaps. Yo. 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 Yo, yo."
Ridcully sighed. "Bursar?"
"Yes, Arch-Chancellor?
Just try to understand, all right?" Clouds piled up over the mountains. Bildor strode up and down the first field, using one of the ordinary farm scythes. The sharpest one had been temporarily stored at the back of the barn, in case it was blunted by air convection. Some of Miss Flitworth's tenants followed behind him, binding the sheaves and stacking them. Miss Flitworth had never employed more than one man full-time, Bildor learned. She brought in other help as she needed it to save pennies.
"Never seen a man cut corn with a scythe before," said one of them. "It's a sickle job."
They stopped for lunch and ate it under the hedge. Bildor had never paid a great deal of attention to the names and faces of people beyond that necessary for business. Corn stretched over the hillside. It was made up of individual stalks, and to the eye of one stalk, another stalk might be quite an impressive stalk with a dozen amusing and distinctive little mannerisms that set it apart from all other stalks. But to the reaper man, all stalks start off as just stalks. Now he was beginning to recognise the little differences. There was William Spigot, and Gabby Wheels, and Duke Bottomley, all old men, as far as Bill Dorr could judge, with skins like leather. There were young men and women in the village, but at a certain age they seemed to flip straight over to being old without passing through any intermediate stage. And then they stayed old for a long time. Miss Flitworth had said that before they could start a graveyard in these parts, they'd have to hit someone over the head with a shovel. William Spigot was the one that sang when he worked, breaking into that long nasal whine which meant that folk song was about to be perpetrated. Gabby Wheels never said anything. This, Spigot had said, was why he had been called Gabby. Bildor had failed to understand the logic of this, although it seemed transparent to the others. And Duke Bottomley had been named by parents with upwardly mobile, if rather simplistic, ideas about class structure. His brothers were Squire, Earl, and King. Now they sat in a row under the hedge, putting off the moment when they'd need to start work again. A glugging noise came from the end of the row.
"It's not been a bad old summer, then," said Spigot. "And good harvest, weather for change." "Ah, many a slip 'twixt dress and drawers," said Duke. "Last night I saw a spider spinning its web backwards. That's a sure sign there's going to be a dreadful storm."
"Don't see how spiders know things like that."
Gabby Wheels passed a big earthenware jug to Bildor. Something sloshed.
"What is this?"
"Apple juice," said Spigot.
The others laughed.
"Ah," said Bildor. "Strong distilled spirits given humorously to the unsuspecting newcomer, thus to afford simple amusement when he becomes inadvertently inebriated."
"Quar," said Spigot.
Bildor took a long swig.
"And I saw swallows flying low," said Duke, "and partridges are heading for the woods, and there's a lot of big snails about, and—"
"I don't reckon any of them buggers knows the first thing about meteorology," says Spigot. "I reckon you goes round telling them. Hey, lads, big storm coming, Mr. Spider, so get on and do something folklorish."
Bildor took another drink.
"What is the name of the blacksmith in the village?"
Spigot nodded.
"That's Ned Simnel, down by the green. Course he's real busy about now, what with the harvest and all."
"I have some work for him,"
Bill Dawe got up and strode away towards the gate.
Bill?
He stopped.
Yes?
You can leave the brandy behind, then.
The village forge was dark and stifling in the heat, but Bill Dawe had very good eyesight. Something moved among a complicated heap of metal. It turned out to be the lower half of a man. His upper body was somewhere in the machinery, from which came the occasional grunt. A hand shot out as Bill Dawe approached.
Right, give me a 3/8 Gripley.
Bill looked around. A variety of tools were strewn around the forge.
Come on, come on,
said a voice from somewhere in the machine. Bill Dawe selected a piece of shaped metal at random and placed it in the hand. It was drawn inside. There was a metallic noise and a grunt.
I said a Gripley. This isn't a
There was the scringing noise of a piece of metal giving way.
My thumb! My thumb! You made me!
There was a clang.
Oh, that was my head! Now look what you made me do! And the ratchet spring snapped off in the trunnion armature again. Do you realise?
No, I am sorry.
There was a pause.
Is that you, young Egbert?
No, it is me, old Bill Dawe.
There was a series of thumps and twanging noises as the top half of the human extricated itself from the machinery and turned out to belong to a young man with black curly hair, a black face, black shirt, and black apron. He wiped a cloth across his face, leaving a pink smear, and blinked the sweat out of his eyes.
Who are you?
Good old Bill Dawe, working for Miss Flitworth.
Oh, yes, the man in the fire. Hero of the hour, I heard. Put it there.
He extended a black hand. Bill Dawe looked at it blankly.
I am sorry. I still do not know what a 3/8 Gripley is.
I mean your hand, Mr. Dawe.
Bill Dawe hesitated and then put his hand in the young man's palm. The oil-rimmed eyes glazed for a moment as the brain overruled the sense of touch, and then the smith smiled.
The name's Simnel. What do you think, eh?
It's a good name.
No, I mean the machine. Pretty ingenious, eh?
Bill Dawe regarded it with polite incomprehension. It looked at first sight like a portable windmill that had been attacked by an enormous insect, and at second sight like a touring torture chamber for an inquisition that wanted to get out and about a bit and enjoy the fresh air. Mysterious jointed arms stuck out at various angles. There were belts and long springs. The whole thing was mounted on spiked metal wheels.
Of course, you're not seeing it at its best when it's standing still, said Simnel. It needs a horse to pull it. At the moment, anyway. I've got one or two rather radical ideas in that direction,
he added dreamily.
It is a device of some sort?
Simnel looked mildly affronted.
I prefer the term machine, he said. It will revolutionise farming methods and drag them kicking and screaming into the century of the fruit bat. My folk have had this forge for 300 years, but Ned Simnel doesn't intend to spend the rest of his life nailing bits of bent metal onto horses, I can tell you.
Bill looked at him blankly. Then he bent down and glanced under the machine. A dozen sickles were bolted to a big horizontal wheel. Ingenious linkages took power from the wheels via a selection of pulleys to a whirligig arrangement of metal arms. He began to experience a horrible feeling about the thing in front of him, but he asked anyway.
Well, the art of it all is this camshaft, said Simnel, gratified at the interest. The power comes up via the pulley here, and the cams move the swaging arms, that's these, and the combing gate, which is operated by the reciprocating mechanism, comes down just as the gripping shutter drops in this slot here, and of course at the same time the two brass balls go round and round, and the fletching sheets carry off the straw while the grain drops with the aid of gravity down the riffling screw and into the hopper. Simple.
And the 3/8 Gripley?
Ah, good job you reminded me.
Simnel fished around among the debris on the floor, picked up a small knurled object, and screwed it onto a protruding piece of the mechanism.
Very important job. It stops the elliptical cam gradually sliding up the beam shaft and catching on the flange rebate, with disastrous results, as you can no doubt imagine.
Simnel stood back and wiped his hands on a cloth, making them slightly more oily.
I'm calling it the Combination Harvester, he said.
Bill Dawe felt very old. In fact, he was very old, but he'd never felt it as much as this. Somewhere in the shadow of his soul, he felt he knew, without a blacksmith explaining, what it was that the Combination Harvester was supposed to do.
Oh.
We're going to give it a trial run this afternoon up in old Peedbury's big field. It looks very promising, I must say. What you're looking at now, Mr. Dawe, is the future.
Yes. Bill Dawe ran his hand over the framework. And the harvest itself?
What about it?
What will it think of it? Will it know?
Simnel wrinkled his nose.
No? No? It won't know anything. Corn's corn.
And sixpence is sixpence.
Exactly. Simnel hesitated.
What was it you were wanting?
The tall figure ran a disconsolate finger over the oily mechanism.
Mr. Dawe?
Pardon? Oh, yes. I had something for you to do.
He strode out of the forge and returned almost immediately with something wrapped in silk. He unwrapped it carefully. He'd made a new handle for the blade, not a straight one such as they used in the mountains, but the heavy, double-curved handle of the plains.
You want it beaten out? A new grass nail? Metalwork replacing?
Bill Dawe shook his head.
I want it killed.
Killed?
Yes, totally. Every bit destroyed, so that it is absolutely dead.
Nice scythe, said Simnel. Seems a shame. You've kept a good edge on it.
Don't touch it.
Simnel sucked his finger.
Funny, he said. I could have sworn I didn't touch it. My hand was inches away. Well, it's sharp anyway.
He swished it through the air.
Yes, pretty sharp, I'd say.
He paused, stuck his little finger in his ear and swivelled it around a bit.
You sure you know what you want? He said.
Bill Dawe solemnly repeated his request. Simnel shrugged.
Well, I suppose I can melt it down and burn the handle, he said.
Yes.
Well, okay. It's your scythe, and you're basically right, of course. This is old technology now. Redundant.
I fear you may be right.
Simnel jerked a grimy thumb towards the Combination Harvester. Bill Dawe knew it was made only out of metal and canvas, and therefore couldn't possibly lurk. But it was lurking. Moreover, it was doing so with a chilling, metallic smugness.
You could get Miss Flitworth to buy you one of these, Mr. Dawe. It'd be just the job for a one-man farm like that. I can see you now, up there, up in the breeze, with the belts clacking away and the sparge arms oscillating.
No.
Go on. She could afford it. They say she's got boxes full of treasure from the old days.
No.
Simnel hesitated. The last no contained a threat more certain than the creak of thin ice on a deep river. It said that going any further could be the most foolhardy thing Simnel would ever do.
I'm sure you know your own mind best, he mumbled.
Yes.
Then it'll just be, call it a farthing for the scythe.
Simnel gabbled.
Sorry about that, but it'll use a lot of coals, you see, and those dwarfs keep winding up the price.
Here. It must be done by tonight.
Simnel didn't argue. Arguing would mean that Bill Dawe remained in the forge, and he was getting quite anxious that this should not be so.
Fine, fine.
You understand?
Right, right.
Farewell, said Bill Dawe solemnly, and left.
Simnel shut the doors after him and leaned against them. Phew. Nice man, of course. Everyone was talking about him. It was just that after a couple of minutes in his presence, you got a pins and needles sensation that someone was walking over your grave, and it hadn't even been dug yet. He wandered across the oily floor, filled the tea kettle, and wedged it on a corner of the forge. He picked up a spanner to do some final adjustments to the Combination Harvester, and spotted the scythe leaning against the wall. He tiptoed towards it and realized that tiptoeing was an amazingly stupid thing to do. It wasn't alive, it couldn't hear. It just looked sharp. He raised the spanner and felt guilty about it. But Mr. Dawe had said, Well, Mr. Dawe had said something very odd, using the wrong sort of words to use in talking about a mere implement. But he could hardly object to this. Simnel brought the spanner down hard. There was no resistance. He would have sworn again that the spanner sheared in two, as though it was made of bread several inches from the edge of the blade. He wondered if something could be so sharp that it began to possess not just a sharp edge, but the very essence of sharpness itself, a field of absolute sharpness that actually extended beyond the last atoms of metal.
Bloody hell, fire!
And then he remembered that this was sloppy and superstitious thinking for a man who knew how to bevel a 3/8 Gripply. You knew where you were with the reciprocating linkage. It either worked or it didn't. It certainly didn't present you with mysteries. He looked proudly at the combination harvester. Of course, you needed a horse to pull it. That spoiled things a bit. Horses belonged to yesterday. Tomorrow belonged to the combination harvester and its descendants, which would make the world a cleaner and better place. It was just a matter of taking the horse out of the equation. He tried clockwork, and that wasn't powerful enough. Maybe if he'd tried winding a... Behind him, the kettle boiled over and put the fire out. Simnel fought his way through the steam. That was the bloody trouble. Every time, whenever someone was trying to do a bit of sensible thinking, there was always some pointless distraction.